Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main with my co-host forever and ever, Mr. Bryce Castilla.
Hi, I'm glad to be back again, as I always am, every week, forever.
You know, some people say that this is the most important podcast we do.
I've heard that, and I would agree with that.
But it's also the first podcast Brian and Justin are like, hey, I can't stick around for it. I got to go do other important things.
It's number one on the cut list.
But we understand
it happens,
and really Bryce is the heart and soul of all of this, so that's all that matters.
Oh, thank you.
So we love it when we say, hey, here's our thought on something, and then people write back and say, hey, that was great, or no, you guys are idiots, you ruined my life, and we're like, hey, whoopsie-doo, what do we know? And that's our policy here. Whoopsie-doo, what do we know? We don't know. We are happy to tell you our opinions, and like any opinion, don't give it undue weight. Now, if we're opining, if you will, on things that we seem to have some experience in, then you could say like, okay, that's your experience. But one of the dangers of – I was talking about this with a friend yesterday. When you read about somebody's success story of how they got to be where they were, that is their – narrative about what happened. It is not necessarily what happened. And often we say, you know, so-and-so did this and make him successful. I'm like,
but that's that person.
We heard this is what they did,
yeah.
But we don't know that that's what they did. And there's a difference there, because we're very good at being critical of something we disagree with or something that's counter to our opinion. But if something has a narrative and it fits nicely and it's kind of feels within a realm of what we expect to hear, we don't often get critical. And I'm aware of like a couple of success stories of people in entertainment and tech where I've been told like, no, this is the thing that really happened, but you can't say that because, you know, it would be. And that's, I think, happens a lot. Not to say like, oh, it's a conspiracy or this or that, but it's like,
it's people doing what they innately do, which is massage the truth or create a bigger story, you know, the big fish. Mm-hmm.
Or and uncomplicated. So like how I got my TV show on A&E, the simple version is I had some producing friends who were talking to an executive at A&E, and he says, you know, we'd like to do magic. They're like, we know a guy. The more complicated version of it, that executive had heard of me before because somebody else had pitched a different show unbeknownst to me, with me as one of the people in it, you know, and my name had come up before. And that just, now it's like, the narratives and people like, let's condense it. Your friends did this. Like, right. Yeah, it makes it easy. And so these things happen all the time. So anyhow, when it comes to when, and that extends to us saying, well, this is what we did and we don't know what else happened. Like, we don't know that, like, if I'm like, I got this book deal here, and it's because this agent called me, maybe they had a really awesome person doing readings there, you know, doing coverage for them. Mm-hmm. And that was the person who's a big fan of mine. And I had no idea that was why that happened. So there are many, many things you don't know what goes on there. So when we say, hey, this is what we did, this is how we made it, we don't know.
Yeah, everything. This is. We should rename this the Grain of Salt podcast.
Yeah, and you don't know that, like, oh yeah, you know, Andrew, like, you almost got your own Fox show back in 2009, but you were at a party in L.A. and the guy you were rude to, you know, because, you know, it turns out he was the assistant to the guy that was about to put your name on the list for that. Mm-hmm. But you'll never know that. These things you'll never know happened. So.
Yeah.
But I've seen that happen too. I've seen that, like, oh yeah, we like that person, but this thing didn't. I'm like, wow, they have no idea how close they got.
Well, and, what's the saying? I feel like I don't have it. I feel like I have 80% of it, where luck is preparation plus time. Is that right?
Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that, right? Like it requires both a lot of at-bats and a lot of stuff that is both out of your control, and you will never know the circumstances for it. So you have to be constantly, you have to keep trying and keep being open to not just opportunities, but also just random happenstance.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, it's how you take things change all of a sudden. How do I take advantage of and deal with that?
Yeah.
So all this, we just want to bring up that a while back we had an email from Cameron Mesmer. Cameron was in Montana at the time, and he was running a fun room and wanted our advice on expanding it, what to do with it, whatever. And because, you know, all our ample experience is running fun rooms. Actually, we worked at a magic shop that had kind of a magic theater back there, but he had a fun room, games, things like this. So he wanted our thoughts on this, and we gave him our advice. We all had different advice, and his email kind of recaps that. Says, hello, After Things, all three, I know he meant four, of you changed my life with this podcast. Now, whenever I read that, my heart starts to clench. I'm like, oh, no.
What did we do? Oh, God.
Good. You don't take me seriously. And all of your advice was exactly correct. All of us, all three of us were right.
Oh, nice.
This is Cameron Mesmer from Billings, Montana. I'm one, the one who wrote you back almost 2 years ago. At a successful fun room and still unsure of my future and path, Justin said I should write back how I decided. Andrew suggested branching out as an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Brian suggested branching out from magic to something completely different. Justin just suggested I needed a push to move out of my small town. You're 100% correct. Snow child. Snow is child abuse.
Kids
after
love the snow.
2 years, I agree. After 2 years, a lot has changed. I got divorced. Okay. Anyway, that wasn't our advice, but, you know. bought the fun room from my ex. I moved the fun room twice.
Wow.
Thought about suicide multiple times. Mm-hmm. And 1,000 other speeding tickets now. And I want to talk about this.
Drive safely, everybody.
Yeah, that and as far as those thoughts, like, don't feel alone about having those thoughts. Don't feel that it is, you know, we all go through periods where you're just like, I don't know what comes next. I don't want to deal with anxiety. I feel worthless. I feel whatever. Step number one, if you're feeling that way, is understand that everybody I know has felt like every creative I know has dealt with this to some extent at some point, you know, or somebody going through an emotional thing like that. And then, you know, if it's something that you feel like you're recurring, like absolutely get help. But don't everybody feels like everybody I know has felt like the biggest loser in the world at some point or multiple points.
Yeah.
You know, and even really successful people who you look at, oh, that person's so successful. Like, yeah, but all of a sudden they got turned down for the next two things that happened and they never had that before. And that crash was really, really troubling for them. So,
and you know, we're not experts about this specifically. I know we just said take a grain of salt, but, you know, a very general thing that I can say is like, what helped me again, personal experience was to try to weather the storm and give myself time to process and understand the situation and try to find some form of help. There are lots of different types of help out there and they're not all the same. There's no one cure all, but try to find something that can help you, whether that's talking to a professional, talking to a friend, talking to a hotline or any number of other things. But
yeah. And I would say, like, and we all know that part you need, but I want to just sort of address the fact, like, understand that a lot of the people I know who are creative, you would never think go through that kind of depression do. It's way more common. So if you're going through that, know that's common. But like, as Bryce is like, you know what, like, you know, when we're depressed, it makes it harder to think about things and everything magnifies. It gets worse, whatever. But just know that it's like I've talked to a lot of friends. It's a very, very common thing to get to feel kind of, particularly if you're creative and you're trying to do something different. Is you're like, society says, hey, this is the best way. This is the plan of action. Like, I'm going to do something different. And then you're like, Oh my God. What have I done? But anyhow, I just want to touch upon that.
But there's a good side. There's a good turn to this letter.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's a very good turn. So now the fun room is now two rooms in one building, so I could double my potential income. Thanks, Andrew. I had one of the best years ever and my hardest year ever, and it's thanks to you.
Oh, that's great.
Just send me my commission. It's fine. I found a new woman who's insanely talented singer, and we're working on a combination magic variety show. I haven't felt this alive in years. Thanks, Brian.
Wow.
That's a weird name for her, but that's fine. I've never felt joy in performance like this, and it's thanks to you. So that was Brian's suggestion. And I'm trying to sell all fun and games and get an RV and live as a traveling performer with my new partner. Thanks, Justin. I've hated Montana for a while, and I needed a push. I'm your age, and I've never moved from home. This is the biggest decision ever, and have you to blame for it. Thank you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. I've never been happier and more fulfilled, and I can't help but think it's because of a podcast I listened to 2 dozen times. Well, that's pathetic. I also have a performance-related question since you're all performers. It is one of the problems that we all sort of deal with at some point, and sometimes we get a solution for this. It's great. Is that when you're a creative or an entrepreneur and you don't know any others and you're the only one there, On one hand, you can be in an environment where great, you're like, it's like your superpowers. You see the world more clearly than everybody else does, and you see opportunity and you can succeed. And that's why one of the things I love about our country in America is that people who come from other environments that don't have as many opportunities, who are looking for opportunities, there's a reason why we have some of the most successful immigrants in the world. There's a reason why, like, somebody like Elon Musk in South Africa can run PayPal. Or, you know, you get, you know, some of the people running Microsoft or Google or the founders in these companies come from other places, is they see things differently. They come from places and they even come in environments here where people aren't as entrepreneurial as they can be. And all of a sudden, like, why don't you do this? People are like, I don't know. It's the way things are. So it can be a challenge being by yourself. And so not having somebody to talk to or bounce ideas off of and say, what about this? What about this? It's kind of why we do this podcast, is that it helps.
I've had so many times where I'm either working on something and I become too close to it, and it's not, you know, a routine thing that I'm doing. I'm doing something bespoke. I don't have a perfect guidebook on how to do it. And when I can take those contributions and show them to someone else, whether they know a lot about editing, they know a lot about video, or they don't know anything, but they've seen stuff before. That's very clarifying, you know, knowing that you can just have any second perspective, so you have a better sense of what the form is. You know, we did a promotional sketch for Scam Stuff a few months back, and it was the first thing that we'd ever, like, I had written up a script and a shot list, and we kept, I, you know, it was our first time really, like, keeping to something really heavily planned and organized, and the day of or the day before, I was, like, really, you know, nose to the grindstone to edit it and get it finished, and I was too close to it, and I could feel the friction of, like, showing the cut and saying, like, I made all the decisions on this. I feel like I made the best decision everywhere, and showing it and saying what and hearing back, well, what if you did this and this and this, you know, that's on me to, like, I don't always handle criticism very well. No one does, I think. But it was working through that friction of having another perspective ended up making it come out better. And now that I have distance from it, I'm glad that there was that moment and that those other perspectives to say, well, this works, this doesn't work, and get second opinions on stuff.
There is, I think, points for every creative. I think there's a point where you just kind of got to play around with stuff and unsupervised, uncriticized. Let me play with this. Let me go try things, whatever. Make a few mistakes. Let me enjoy the experience of creating before I deal with that. And once that phase, once you sort of get it a little bit, then you want to get into, like, okay, tell me what you think, tell me what you do. And that's sometimes I'm always conscious of when I talk to other people who are creatives and they say, I want feedback. And I'm like, I don't think you want feedback right now. I think you want to play a little more. I think I want you to tell me what you like and what you don't like. And then at some point we can have a conversation about on a larger scale, because, you know, you want to have that. But then once you're ready for it, that's where growth really, really happens, because you get that outside thing. And so, you know, that's the thing that sucks in some ways about being the only person who is into the things you're into. It's like, your opinions don't form. And there's more to his email. I want to get to that. But sure. I have friends that were really, really smart people in high school. And, you know, people told them they were smart. They were smart. They were smarter than the teachers, which afterwards, being smarter than a high school teacher, you know, yay. But, you know, they then liked that. And then they had the opportunity to either spend time with other really smart people, go to college, like get into a really difficult program to be around other people, and then realize, no, you're not the smartest person in the world, or avoid that and just sort of kind of go do their own thing and be the sort of the lone genius as they saw it. And the difference I can say now is the friends of mine who said, you know what, I want to go around to other smart people and I want to be really, really challenged, they're doing amazing, great things. My friends who said, no, I want to avoid, and not consciously avoid it, but like, no, I don't get along with these people. I don't get along. They'll get me or whatever. I don't like having being told that I'm wrong, kind of thing. I don't want to be told that my opinions aren't formed or whatever. The ones that sort of decided to kind of go off and do their own sort of thing, they're not and I mean their own thing, meaning like avoiding contacting, being around other people smarter than them, even, you know, those ones I haven't heard from, you know, like, you know, you look up what they're doing and you're like, wow, like you didn't grow because you weren't challenged. You know, your brain, you have the same ideas you did when you're 17, you know, later on in life, because you wouldn't let anybody challenge them or you ignored any challenges to them.
Yeah. So, and I almost wonder if it would be helpful if you are a person listening to this and unsure of if that is you, of if a good litmus test would be to try a different creative field, to start over, even hobby or a trial thing of just like, hey, try painting or try learning an instrument or try something new that you probably don't have any experience with, and try to take an honest reaction of how you are reacting to you know, open waters in mm-hmm. into something that you really have no sense of, and you will probably need at least input of someone else to judge, you know, your progress. Try it out.
So let's get to the rest of the email. He has a question. Sure. And I mean, this would be great if Justin and Brian were here, but they're not. Who cares? One of the things that's been talked about before is I've known a number of comedians and magicians have done this. I don't know if Brian does this or if that came up from there, but I knew another guy that did this who ended his life, now that I think about it. So maybe it's not the best. Just remember that. Wow. Depressing. I was just sad because I'm like, oh, who did I first hear about this, you know, whole idea of counting laughs per minute? And then
it was from, geez.
Yeah. I'm like, oh yeah. All right. So on the right side, anyhow, this question was, I wanted to count my laughs per minute like I've heard comics do for their shows. According to my patented hour of research, headline comics do about 4 to 6 laughs per minute. I got 3.8, about a laugh every 15 seconds. Not bad for nobody kids magician to state with more cows than people. My question is, how did you guys measure how you were doing performance-wise? Did you measure laughs or length of laughter or applause or interactions? Does analysis help in something like this? Or just practice? How do I use this information to get better? Comedy is hard. It's a fact. Don't know if you know this. Comedy is hard. Thus, me bringing up, the guy I knew who did this thing, he, you know, went through the depression and had a very sad end to that. Yeah. And I would say that it can be certainly a measure. And I would say that in certain environments, laughs per minute can be very, very helpful metrics. You just have to be careful, because if you're saying comics in general, look at some of the great comics, and I would say a guy like George Carlin might have fewer laughs per minute versus somebody who's more rapid fire or whatever. Yeah. Who's the better comic? It's subjective. If you're looking at working in a different environment, let's say, like, if you want to be a cruise ship comedian, you want to work in cruise ships for family shows and stuff, laughs per minute could be a very, very good thing. Question two, though, is it's like there's number of laughs. It's also how much of your audience is laughing. If it's only the kids laughing, you know, and the adults aren't, then that's, you need to, the material needs to change, not necessarily the pacing, or you need to expand that. Mm-hmm. So as far as metrics that I've used, I looked at, like, my favorites were people like Harry Anderson or Penn and Teller, who were way more slow burn, you know? And I liked that. I liked that because I wasn't trying to, I did it for a period of time. I did some kind of straight up kind of comedy magic, which was, I just went for, cause I said, you know, maybe I want to go for just a faster paced thing. And I put together an act that was just, it's sort of where my shock magic came from. It was just beat, 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 things happening, whatever. And I got a lot of laughs per minute, and I could go take that act and I could do, you know, I could do comedy clubs in Miami. I could go take that in places that were, the last thing they wanted to see was a magician on stage, but because it was just super visual, super rapid fire kind of things, it worked. But I wasn't happy with it. It wasn't what I wanted to do. Yeah. So I think you have to figure out where do you want to go with it? What do you want to do with it? And, you know, I have friends that get a lot of laughs per minute who do family shows, but their jokes are really, really cheesy, and they're not going to play they're never going to get a booking on a ship, you know, on a more sophisticated, quote, theoretically more sophisticated environment, because the cruise ship directors, the people who book those things, are going to be like, yeah, it's a bunch of cheesy jokes. Like, yeah, anybody can get a laugh out of these kids or this audience like this, but is it with original material? Is it this, whatever? So there are a lot of, it depends on what you want to be, but a lot of dimensions to judge it with.
And I would say, when it comes to specifically laughs per minute, you know, whatever metric you decide to at least keep track of is to be careful of arbitrary metrics, because you could track anything, going back to that skit thing, you know, one of the things that kind of Brian and I have a weird, you know, Brian likes things really fast, you know, he's a very snappy sort of guy. And so especially when I was starting out and getting a lot of like editing notes from him, it would be like, hey, are you like, I think you could lose a minute in this edit of an episode. I bet there's just a minute in there. And that's the way he communicates. And where that friction for me was coming was, well, that's pretty arbitrary. It's not like you were counting moments. You weren't, you know, that was a gut feeling. That's a communications tool for him, right? That's him saying, it's a little too long. I think it's a little too long. It's probably around this much. And you go into editing and you see, well, I can trim to kind of meet this arbitrary number. And whether you hit it or not, you were on the same page that it was, you know, a little fatty. I would just say, you know, understand what the metric, why you were picking the metrics that you're using to pick, to track your performance, right? If last per minute is important to you, which I think it can be fine if it is, does that mean you want to have a faster pace? Or does that mean you think it's too fast? Does it mean that are you concerned about, you know, like Andrew mentioned, the percentage of the audience, the demographic of the audience that you think is laughing? That's, that stuff is harder to track empirically, but you can get a sense of it during the shows, and understand what you are really trying to get at in terms of bettering your set.
Yeah, the one of the things that came to, it's like, yeah, to get in an environment, like when I was doing, when I first started doing cruise ships, I was a teenager, right? And I realized, I thought just making the audience laugh and have fun was what it was about. But I also found out, like, no, it's the cruise director. You know, you can have a great show, a great set, have it great. But if the cruise director doesn't really care for what you're doing, isn't into it, whatever, and he knows he can hire somebody else, a friend or whatever like that, that's a problem. You know, and you need to figure out, like, oh, how do I make this work for this audience? When I did review shows, you know, I knew that, you know, it was a commodity. It's like they could plug any kind of magician into these kind of shows, what they're doing. I needed to know, were the producers who hired me happy? Because the audience loved it. You know, the audience has loved it, but were the producers super happy? And that was kind of like, the audience part was a given. It was a given. Like, I was there because I could make audiences laugh and have fun. The sustainability and the rebookability came into that. And that's the thing you want to think about. If I were looking for a new dimension to play with, how much new material can I add and still maintain that? Can I keep coming up with some new bits and stuff? Yeah. Because when you're in an environment where you're looking at repeats or people coming in there, if the more you can refresh what you're doing and add that and sustain that, then you're on a path to success.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really good, that's a really good comment, Andrew, in that, you know, let's say his 3.81 laughs per minute is a good metric, right? Well, that's like the first layer of success, right? You did it this time. You could do the same thing and probably with brand new audiences or whatever. But how do you get to the next layer of higher level thinking and planning, right? How do you keep it new, keep it fresh, keep entertaining the same audiences? How do you make a performance that is sustainable or create a sustainable comedy writing engine, basically, right? How do you move from a list of good show dates to a guide to making better shows, right? Like you're on the next layer.
There's, you know, and somebody mentioned in the chat said that, like, you know, the Scoop Fest comics load the last run. Like, yeah, and a lot of comics don't like in it, but again, it's comics are not known for their appeal to empirical evidence on what makes things better and stuff. And there are a lot of things comics hate, like, no, this thing really works or whatever or not. And some, either you'll get a different opinion. Like, yeah, I don't think it should be the metric. In magic, there is if you said, how many tricks can I do, you know, per 10 minutes or minutes, whatever. On one hand, it's unhealthy, but on the other hand, it's actually very healthy. And on one hand, it's unhealthy because if you're just saying, I'm just going to do volume and I'm going to get, hey, reaction, 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 reaction. Are the quality of it good? Are people talking about that particular thing, like how much they were fooled? If it takes three times as long to set up a joke and the laugh is super, super powerful, that's probably better than 10 jokes. You know, it depends. It's of highly variable. It's kind of the quality or the depth of it. In magic, you get Penn and Teller who set up a lot for something and they have a big payoff. Then you have styles of magic like manipulation magic where every 2 seconds your card's appearing or doves appearing or, you know, something's happening there. If you said, well, they had, you know, they must be better because they had more pieces of magic per minute than Penn and Teller did. It's like, yeah, but one of those pieces wasn't, didn't have the same emotional payoff as what they did, you know? So it is, and good, by the way, good for, you know, keeping people laughing at a great rate. That's wonderful. That is absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. But you just got to figure out, you know, what does your audience want?
Yeah. So. And I think, you know, going back to what you just said of like how many, you know, segments or how many tricks could you do in 10 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour? Like, that is helpful information. In it. That is less arbitrary than how many laughs can you get per minute, right? This is hard data that you can use when you're booking. Like, hey, if you book me for a 20-minute show, I'll probably do about 4 or 5 tricks, whatever the right number is, right? Like, you know, that's non-arbitrary metrics. And I think that's also helpful.
You know, I think another kind of metric that I think is kind of neat in that in magic, kind of one of the ways that you sort of feel like you're stretching yourself or your wings as a performer is the more you're able to do and improvise and just take a situation and say like, oh, yeah, I went to a party last night. All I had was a spoon. I did 15 minutes and had them, you know, they had a great time, you know, it's doing that. You know, and I'm like, I hate doing magic now. So, you know, I'm the worst example of that. But that thing is, if you're a comedian, you look at like, you know, you'd get comedians like Jay Leno would try to write like a, you know, a new show every day if you can. You know, he'd sit there and just, you'd pick up the newspaper and you write a bunch of new jokes. And that was sort of the same formula for Bob Hope, where Bob Hope would work with, you know, he'd work with writers and have just new material all the time. And that's why a guy like Jay Leno became super bookable, because we can have him every year and it will be an entirely new show. Mm-hmm. And some performers go, I don't need to. And it's like, you know, like most of my audience is different. It's like, yeah, but if you got 10% of your audience that's seen before and you have all new material, that's 1 out of 10 people are going to be like, oh, wow, this is great. It's new. I never heard this one. I didn't know this. It's like he does a new show every time. Yeah. They become super fans of this things, and people have all the excuses in the world not to do new material. Yeah, but if people like this thing, I don't want to know, they can come back and see it. And it's like, yeah, if you've got an amazing bit, sure, you can do that, but you don't, you know, and it's we want all the excuses in the world to be lazy. So,
yeah,
that's our thought. One more thing, which was, I got a nice thing on Twitter. Let me pull this up.
Oh, sure.
And just because
that's at Andrew Main on Twitter, right?
I'm a little bit active there, but like, you know, I've mentioned like my total time on Facebook this year has been like, you know, probably 20 minutes when I had a book out to go put an update or something like that. And even Twitter, I try to engage in that because I really, really, really like to have, I really like to engage with people. Twitter, I prefer because it can be very, you know, very easy to have a quick back and forth and it's not too consuming. And anyway, we did a talk about mentioning like, hey, I think that, you know, the idea of trying to pick up a skill, and I lost this here, but somebody said, hey, thanks. They went to, I think, Udemy or lynda.com, and they started learning WordPress.
Oh, cool.
So, and that's, yeah, that's a man, I can't reiterate this enough. Like if my big cause, if I was going to choose a cause, it is going to be like, hey, learn a skill. Learn, pick up, always be picking up something new or going deeper into something else. You want your resume to change year to year when you list your skills, you know? And sometimes you go like, no, I have this, I can put this there, but like, can you put it? Is it really good? Are you really good at it? And then it for a couple reasons. One, you see more opportunities when you have more skills. You see way more opportunities out there, which is helpful. You know, you don't feel as helpless if you're in a situation where the thing you're doing is sort of not working. Your hire ability increases considerably. it makes you more well-rounded as a person if you learn about this other thing, how to do this sort of thing. Like, I know more about how to run make a 35 millimeter camera work, or, you know, I did something crazy. I learned how to weld. You know, I learned these other skills there, because all of a sudden you're like, and that's something like, what? Like, there are tech shops and other places and things like this that actually teaches cool stuff that you can learn how to do. It helps. It's expanding. But also, as you get older, learning new skills is one of the ways to keep mental alertness and to not go through a degradation of your mental capabilities. Okay. People who are less likely, there can be a tremendous amount of genetic component to this, but the studies show that people who are learning new skills have higher cognitive abilities later on in life. And it's easy to say, well, I don't have to worry about future me. Like, yeah, but you now is making decisions for future you. So yeah. Anyhow.
And like constantly challenging yourself is a very good motivator, right? Like, I feel my most productive when I have more stuff on my plate to get done. And it's when when things are settled that things fall on the wayside. I fell off of Duolingo for, gosh, the past couple of weeks now. I feel it a little bit, where it's just like, I used to have this thing I was doing every day. Now, granted, I really think I was hitting a weird limit on this new course that is still being flushed out. But it was a thing that I was that I always tried to do every day, and I felt bad when I didn't do it, and I felt like that was a skill I could at least practically use, or certainly could see through the practice the results of my learning, right? I could say, okay, well, I'm doing better on these exercises because I'm doing it every day, because I'm building up this habit, because I'm building this skill. And so having something like that, even whether you're doing it every day, you're doing it every week, you're setting aside time to do it, you are creating a habit and you are pushing yourself in general to keep up with all of your works, not just this new thing.
Yeah, there is having more commitment. There's a point where there's like peak commitment, where you have enough commitments that makes you organize your time much better. There's a point where you have too few and you don't organize your time at all. Mm-hmm. And I've learned that, because then I'm like, okay, I won't spend, I'm not going to spend 4 hours on the internet today looking up old episodes of, TV shows from the 1980s or something, Tales of the Golden Monkey or whatever, because I'm curious. I remember this thing. Like, I'm watching this. Then it's like, wow, 4 hours later, like, that was a complete waste of time, complete, utter waste of time. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of go like, I don't have time. And that's a thing that sort of – the one thing that drives me nuts is when I go hear people say, I don't have time, and I know that they did X, Y, and Z. And it's like, no, you chose not to make this a priority. Because I don't let myself give myself the excuse, I didn't have the time. I'm like, let me do an accounting of what I did in the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
There's probably some time there to get stuff done. Yeah. But there's I didn't feel like it. Like, that's not the same as not having time.
Well, and those habits are things you have to break out of too, right? Yeah. if someone's saying like they don't have time, that's because that thing was not important to them versus what was in the moment. And that's not something you can just say, you need to shift your priorities. You have to work into it to change your behavior, at least on a regular basis.
Well, it's step one is being honest. Is like I have like my place is in sort of state of mix. Like, my office here is a disaster, right? Mm-hmm. Disaster. I have the time. I choose not to, because I choose to use the time for something else. That's the thing. It's like, I choose not to. I don't go like, I don't have the time to do this. Like, you know what? Like, I got stuff I got to do after this podcast. I have some things I have to do, helping a friend out. I have a friend that's making a short film. I promised I'll make some stuff for them. I got to do that. That's part of it. But like, I could spend the time to go through this, but I'm like, you know what? I'd rather spend the time doing this, working on a coding project. And so it's like, but I know what it is, but it's not, I don't have a time. It's more like I prioritize something else. I don't feel like it. That's step number one. It's just to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
So anyhow, any picks?
Okay, I did a music pick for Weird Things, but I'm gonna do another one, and it's gonna be the exact opposite. Where the one I picked for Weird Things was maybe a little tough to get into, and I think not everybody will end up liking it aesthetically. Over the weekend, over the past few weeks, I've really, I like to use Spotify because Spotify has really good playlists, and there is a singer that I found through one of these playlists, and I loved the song, and so I went to the album, and I loved the album, so I checked out another album, and I love that album, and now I'm like diving into this catalog of music that she's done. Her name is Nancy Wilson, not the singer of Heart, but a jazz singer. She does like jazz and pop songs. She got started in the 60s, I believe, recorded, like 80 albums of music in her career, and just has this incredible, smooth, confident voice. It's just very sweet music with a jazz flair to it, and I think if you went and picked any album and you picked any song, I think you would find something really, really nice to listen to. That's kind of what I've been doing, is just going and picking a new album on hers and hitting shuffle and just really relaxing. So that's my pick, Nancy Wilson on Spotify.
That's wonderful. One of the things I love about the age that we live in, and I've made this sort of comment before, is, you know, I'd say I go to the mall, but I don't know the last time I was actually at a mall. But I go somewhere and I'll see a 17-year-old kid with a Led Zeppelin shirt. And I use this example because I've seen this, and they still sell those shirts and all this. And I made a comment to a friend, and I don't even know if they even really know who they are. I'm like, no, they probably know the catalog better than you do. You know, the image is like, this kid just chose this shirt because this kid chose this shirt because their exposure to music now is better than our exposure to music. Their ability to find stuff and look at stuff and enjoy it.
Well, and not even just music, like information. You know, I was able to look her up and find out all about how her career started and when she retired and labels and all these discography stuff that was very difficult and not as collected as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. It's amazing. You can, you know, old interviews and things like this, you can find, you know, there aren't YouTube interviews and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. And that's the kind of thing where, on one hand, because it's so cheap and readily available, we don't value it as much as we can. But when you do, when you find a topic you want to go down that rabbit hole on, you appreciate it way more. And so, you know, that's kind of the thing. And, you know, you look at, you're going to get, we're getting, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody is coming out as a film, right? And,
oh, right. The Queen. Yeah.
You saw the trailer for that?
Yeah, I did. And it's kind of got this little mashup motif of the various hits, the Queen hits.
So, you know, you're getting, you know, a movie about Queen and Freddie Mercury. And I have friends that were born after he died,
oh, yeah,
who saw this and are super excited about this movie, because it's like, I'm like, all right, I mean, Freddie Mercury, it's alive when I was alive, and anyway, it was cool. And I think I love Freddie Mercury, but it's like, wow, like this, you know, this love and fascination that, you know, some people have for this person that, you know, who 27 years ago passed away. But, and that's the beauty of it, because you listen to the music and you feel the music, and we're talking about your pick from Weird Things, is you feel this, you feel that's in there. And that's sort of the wonderful age at which we live in, is that you can be a fan of somebody. You know, it's like reading a great writer who wrote, you know, hundreds of years ago. You can sort of fall in love with a writer for that. You can just, you know, be enamored with a person.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the beautiful things about music, is music culture, is that, like, the good stuff doesn't go away anymore. You know, we can still revere people who have since moved on and still have a lot of what was there.
And with streaming music, like, because music already is very easy to consume. Songs are short, relatively speaking. But now there's just ubiquity of access, right? Now it's not, you know, oh, I bought the song, so I have the song, maybe I'll check out the album. It's now I listen to the song, and now I want to find the whole catalog. I want to see the popular songs, the not popular songs, and then the things that sound like it, or the things that other people who like this enjoy. It's a very, like, simple system of like, you know, taking existing connections between artists and songs and stuff and building those out. But it's also a very easy system to flow through, of finding new music, based on the things that you like or based on things that you've never heard of before. And it's really great.
You gave me an idea as you said that, so I quickly wrote it down.
Okay.
So I'm exploring that because that whole, like, the idea that we like to go down these rabbit holes of these things and thinking about, like, how do you curate or create an experience of that for somebody to make it easy to sort of, you know, it, sometimes I thought about, like, man, it'd be cool if I could ask Alexa to, like, talk about Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know,
just nerd out with me, A word.
Yeah, nerd out with me, you know, in kind of a cool way and you know, and have a context to what's going on there.
When I think that's what every tech company wants to solve right now, right? Like a recommendation engine, how to put stuff in front of you at the right time with the right mood and be successful. And
but I think yes, and but yeah. I also think that like there are forms of content and entertainment that we haven't really drawn circles around, which means they're underdeveloped and underserved in what they could be. Mm-hmm. You know, the Wikipedia was interesting because the wiki sort of idea was amazing. You know, like let's allow people want to talk about this stuff. Let's make it easy for the crowd to get together on a platform and aggregate a lot of information for that. And so when you go through the unofficial Star Wars or the Wikipedia and stuff, it's amazing, and it can be an amazing rabbit hole to dive down into.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Disney and you're looking at like, hey, what are other forms of content we can create for people? They're like, well, we know we can do a book. You know, Star Wars, Lucasfilm has always had like they've had like the database there, but it's like, is there some other form of like, and is it an intelligent agent that you can talk to about that and it knows these things about it and can play clips and do stuff and just generate an experience about like, oh, tell me about Ewoks. Like, oh, we've got clips from every Ewok appearance they've been, and I could tell you who played the actors and have a kind of cool, you know,
yeah,
guided experience.
That's so interesting. I know there was, man, how long ago was this now? There was a game that had come out maybe 7 or 8 years ago now, Metal Gear Solid 4. And it was like the big culmination of this very long franchise. There had been like 6 or 7 games. And so they put out the game, and the game came with an encyclopedia app for it. And mm-hmm. you had it on the PlayStation, and it was just like a Wikipedia or a Wikia where, mm-hmm. you know, you had information on the characters and all of their organizations, and it was all hyperlinked. Mm-hmm. You know, around. And I like that series, and some of my favorite times of that series were just going into that encyclopedia and rereading and also diving deeper into these things. Oh, I didn't know, you know, a lot about this thing, or I didn't know too much about this old, but this makes sense now, you know, this is connected to this. And there's something about that of like connected information that really helps.
And it's, you know, if you indulge me in a tangent for a moment,
sure.
is back when the original concept of hypertext was first sort of proposed, you know, once people realized I have a document online and I have text, and this is pre-World Wide Web, this is early ages of internet, was the realization like, oh, every word can connect to another document. A document can be a lot of things. It's dynamic. It's not like a book. And that was really the exciting thing. And we've certainly seen that to an extent. Well, the whole web is sort of very dynamic, but news articles, the only thing that you really encounter that's very dynamic is the advertising,
right.
You know? You get a little bit of that. Like you mentioned a company, and you'll see like they'll put the current like company stock price on there, whatever. But the idea of creating really dynamic sort of things is still yet to be delivered, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's something about Wikipedia that feels like you can't find it in most other parts of the web. Like I pulled up this album link for Nancy Wilson, and it's like links everywhere. Nancy Wilson, Capitol Records, Frank Sinatra, the song, mm-hmm. CD, just what is a CD? You know, and it's a treasure trove. It is a mixture of like accessibility of information and generosity of information, that mm-hmm. there's so much information and we're making it so easy to flow between concepts and people, and it feels generous. It feels like the culmination of what this should be, of putting people and putting ideas together and connecting them in a way that we are all better for.
Yeah, it is. It is. We're and it's we take it for granted a lot. So I guess, you know, hey, listen, support Wikipedia if you can feel like it, too. It's not without its flaws, but man, does it, it has become super, super, super useful. Yeah. So it's funny. Somebody mentioned Parker Lewis can't lose. And I was like, oh, Miss Musso, who played that? You know, and then you're like, vroom, rabbit hole.
Yeah. Even stuff like, you know, IMDb, I guess, is kind of similar in that it's credit, you know, crediting and stuff. But
yeah, the challenge with IMDb was another Amazon company, by the way, is that when they split it on IMDb and IMDb Pro, it became less of a, and a lot of the access to stuff became pro features, which are justifiable, but it became you less. It's not as good of a place to go to now for like a lot of behind the scenes stuff on things. And I think there could be a really cool alternative to it with a lot more deeper stuff about, you know, movies and stuff and things like that. Like you could say, well, Wikipedia can be that, but sometimes you need to draw a circle around it and say, this is where this is. And then the things tend to grow.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the sort of thing where with larger franchises, Wikias become a very good thing because, you know, Wikipedia wants to be general information. It doesn't want to dive down into lore of most things, right? Like I think, you know, if you had a TV show, the most granular it would probably get is having an episode for a specific show for or having a page for a specific episode. But, you know, if you want to talk about running gags, lore, you know, extensive explanations of this thing in other media or what, like TV tropes. I think a lot of stuff on TV tropes won't fit into Wikipedia, and that's fine because that's what TV tropes is. TV tropes is meant to be conceptual and abstract themes.
My problem like Wikia is like it's and granted that they need to pay the bills, but I don't go there that often because it's so ad heavy.
Yeah.
It's just like I'm like, man, I don't even know where the content is, you know, and clickbaity and whatnot. And that's and again, that's the reality of how we pay for things on the web. So it's like, I guess that's what it is. But it's like it to the traction that maybe they're missing out on something else.
Yeah, it does get tough. You know, there have definitely been time because there are two. Right. There's Wikia and there's like another fan run or like roll your own Wikipedia system. And I know whenever I look for something, I always try to find one of a very specific that uses a specific engine because it like just works better and it doesn't have as many ads. But now I don't even remember the name of it. But
you know, I will tell you the thing I'm most excited for about there being a stable version of blockchain cryptocurrencies that's one not environmentally destructive, like let's say Bitcoin. Just a tremendous amount of, and again, I'm a fan of the concept, but using a system that has you use burns a ton of electricity to generate this thing to me is like, that's not the most environmentally friendly way to do it, you know, but there's, that's a whole nother debate. But the advantage of succumbing to some sort of thing is it makes microtransactions sort of easier. Cause I would love like you go to like, you know, like you go to that site, like, you know, the fandom sites and stuff. And it's like, hey, we're not going to ask you to subscribe because you may never come here again because subscription models work great if people come there. But like you're probably going to come here once per year. It's like, hey, pay 50 cents right now. We'll get rid of all the ads for the next day, you know, while you search.
Yeah. Just like click this button and give us a quarter. Just if you had a good time.
Click a quarter. Be ad free for right now for this entire session.
Yeah.
Coin up. That'd be great. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, that and if you're talking about a blockchain, you're not dealing – you – would ideally not be dealing with a lot of processing or transaction fees, but
yeah,
who knows?
Somebody mentioned there the alternative to software Wikia, and I want to go to alternative2.net for an alternative2.net.
Oh, an alternative to this alternative two site.
type in alternative two.
Right, alternative. Oh no, hey, you know what?
I'm sure they do.
Yeah, I think that's something they probably. I bet I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't the first.
Is there an alternative to it?
Yeah, you got Product Hunt. Sure, privacy tools, Slant, similar sites. Okay, yeah, so.
I they got you. Could block it, but yeah, it's funny. Yeah.
Did you have a pick, Andrew?
What's that?
Did you have a pick?
You know, I don't have a real specific pick, but that's again, fine. My pick again is like, I'm really high on this whole hey, pick up a skill, whatever. But in my advice is, if you want, like, go to if you have like a library card, lynda.com has courses, and I'm going to keep picking this. Udemy right now is doing their Father's Day sale. I'll give you an example. So like Saturday night, I'm working on a project, you know, I've been working on a project where I'm working on Python and JavaScript and some stuff, and I need to do a thing where I need to have my browser talk to a Python script sitting on a server. And again, if some of you go like, well, that sounds very basic and easy, you know, congratulations. For those of you who go like, what the hell is he talking about? I barely knew what that was until I started doing stuff. And I said, I'm going to go learn how to do these things. And so I just want to say these things like, don't be intimidated about like, I'm not that kind of person. Like, yeah, you are. You can learn these things if you need to. Not that everybody needs to. Point is, though, I'm like, I need to have a Python script run on a server. I don't know. I mean, I knew like I have it run on a program somewhere else. You know, I do this. So I type in, you know, run Python server access webpage. And I find out like, there's a thing called Flask, which, again, if you know Python, it's like, yeah, of course, idiots. Like, well, I didn't know. And I'm like, Flask is how you do this. I go to Udemy and I find a course on, I type in, you know, I'm like, I need to learn how to do Flask. And so I go to the Flask website, of course, and they have some nice tutorials there. But I find that like REST APIs with Flask and, you know, Python. I'm like, okay, well, you know, REST APIs, I can look that up and see what that is, or build a SaaS app, which is software as a service app. And I see they've got a few of these things, and you can see when they're late, you know, right last they're updated. One's a 15-hour course. One's a 10-hour course. It's $10, you know,
sure.
$10,
yeah.
Right? I'm like, okay. I open this up. The first part, the first one course, like the first 3 hours is a refresher on Python, which is, if you never took Python, is great. But I just skipped right to, here's how to build a Flask thing, how to do this, dot, dot, dot. I'm like, I get this now.
Yeah.
And then now I have a thing up and running. And it was just this, I paid $10. Somebody taught me professionally, gave me some insight. I watched a video of how this thing works. I was able to go through the code, be able to go do it. Had some questions answered I never would have thought to ask myself as I was going through looking at the stuff. It's amazing. I'm like, we're just living in this amazing time of what's available, and it's cheap.
Yeah.
So
very cool.
Anyhow, you know, I met a friend yesterday, and I was talking about this project, and they studied Python in school. They're an engineer and all this. And they're like, man, like I think you know more about this than I do. I'm like, I've only been at it for a couple of weeks. I don't know that I know more than you do. I'm just not. I don't know what I don't know. And I'm like, I guess I'll go look up this tutorial and go do this, and I'll go do this. And there's a lot to be said for having a really good fundamental understanding of something.
Yeah.
But there's also just not being afraid to just go do it. So,
yeah. I mean, I think even if you're doing it as like a refresher, you will find stuff that you did not know, or you got into a habit of doing, which may not be the most efficient habit, you know, go learn.
Yeah. And there's, and it's, again, I keep going back towards coding, but there is tons of things like on there from how to, like, you know, doing music, you know, podcasting, vocal software, running these things, running all the sort of stuff, marketing, you know, business development, personal develop, leadership, personal finance. You know, there's a lot of great courses there, or just any place that does these courses, and you can do it for cheap or nothing. Just you'll be a better person. And have superpowers. So, anyhow, that's my pick. Bryce, thank you very much.
Of course. I'm here every week, as you know.
Pretty much here every day, but yeah. Yeah. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.